Good morning, the great Midwest cities, towns, villages throughout our listening area. This is Jim Santel. I am once again delighted to be with you on this bright and sunny morning in downtown Waukesha. We're coming to you directly from the studios of WAUK Radio. That's the Shaw in Waukesha. It's 540 AM, 101 FM. Again, Jim Santel, morning cannolis. This is our weekend review of the important stories in law, in government, and yes, also the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so much for joining me. We have a full package of information pieces to chat about this morning, to review from this past week and beyond. Today is also a special presentation, a special program here on Morning Cannolis, because we're going to be spending a lot of our time in the second portion of this first hour, and then going into the second hour talking about a major significant anniversary in the civil rights, the human rights history of our nation and our world, and that is the violence, the shooting at the Sikh temple, the Gurdwara in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, 10 years ago yesterday. And today and tomorrow, in addition to this past week, items of commemoration, times of gathering for the community there in Oak Creek. We'll tell you more about those at the end of our second hour, ways in which you can participate today and tomorrow in recognizing, in acknowledging the problems of our nation still when it comes to violence and the challenges faced by religious communities nationwide, but also recommitting to a time of greater peace and understanding among all peoples. So lots of things going on in Oak Creek. I'm going to go back and tell you exactly what happened there 10 years ago yesterday, revisiting some of the specific stories of that time. But today is a Saturday, August 6th. It is the 218th year of the calendar, 147 days left to go. Normally at this time, I review four or five or six significant events in the history of our world, our nation, our state. This morning, just two of those. It was on August 6th of 1945, 77 years ago today, that we dropped a nuclear bomb on Hiroshima. More power than 120,000 tons of TNT, killed anywhere from 70 to 140,000 people. Estimates vary dramatically, as you can well imagine. Know that from history as well. The bomb itself, called the Little Boy, 130 pounds of uranium-235, the first time in human history that a nuclear weapon used on any civilian population by the United States of America. Certainly devastating to Japan, bringing undeniably a sooner conclusion to World War II. Nonetheless, an important milestone in the history of humankind on this planet. We know as well, 3 days later, August 9th of 1945, a second bomb dropped on Nagasaki, and again, bringing the Second World War perhaps to a sooner conclusion, but nonetheless, a significant event because of that huge, huge event in Japan on these days in 1945, 77 years ago. Jumping ahead quite a bit, 57 years ago, it was on August 6th of 1965 that President Lyndon Baines Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. We have talked a lot about the Voting Rights Act on this very program. Other times when I have had the great privilege and honor of coming into your homes and your businesses to talk about the very significant decisions of the United States Supreme Court in recent years affecting the Voting Rights Act, it was on August 6, 1965, that Lyndon Johnson gathered a number of civil rights leaders, gathered the community together at the White House to sign the Voting Rights Act of 1965, establishing, among other things, these nationwide protections for voting rights, especially those areas, that those jurisdictions that are imposing restrictions principally on people of color, principally our black populations that were being denied, abridged the right to vote under our Constitution on account of race or color, is the way that the Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act sets forth that prohibition. Other prohibitions prohibiting literacy tests and other devices that were historically used to prevent people of color from voting in this country. We know as well that Sections 4 and 5 also established this so-called coverage formula and a pre-clearance procedure that required But those jurisdictions that had historically at that time and in the years that followed, had developed a tradition, a practice of engaging in discriminatory practices when it comes to prohibiting people of color from voting. In those instances, before changes could be made in the voting rights laws of those jurisdictions, you had to get authorization from where? The United States Department of Justice, the Attorney General, and the Civil Rights Division looking at all of those. That was called the pre-clearance procedure, the enforcement under the coverage formula of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and until a case called Shelby County during a recent administration, the full force and effect of the Voting Rights Act to ensure the franchise was extended to all people in this nation was in full force. And then in Shelby County, the United States Supreme Court, in a case authored by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, found that Sections 4 and 5 were unconstitutional because they no longer represented, in Justice Roberts' view and the view of the majority of the Supreme Court, the status of civil rights and the prohibitions on people of color to vote in America, felt they had to be updated, and so found that the interaction of Sections 4 and 5 was unconstitutional and basically removed those from the strong capacity of the law to ensure that voting rights are permitted and enforced for all people. And then just last year in August of 2021, another major decision, a case called Brnovich, named after the Attorney General of the state of Arizona, a fellow who is still in the news these days. Case in which the Supreme Court dealt yet another blow to the Voting Rights Act of 1965 by supporting under Section 2 the authorization of the Arizona legislature to impose some regulations, some restrictions, frankly, on the manner and means of voting in Arizona that many people feel strongly inhibited the capacity of the Department of Justice to go forward. To this day, Sections 2, Sections 4 and 5 are not routinely accessible to the United States Department of Justice as it was envisioned 57 years ago today. Nonetheless, there are remedies for that pending in the Congress. We have talked about those before, especially under the name of John Lewis. The John Lewis Voting Rights Act passed by the United States House of Representatives, still waiting for passage by the Senate to restore the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to where it was 57 years ago today. This landmark piece of legislation passed And now, not nearly as strong and impactful as it was at that time. Both very significant events in the history of our nation, August 6, 1945, and August 6, 1965, on this day. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. This is Morning Cannolis. We're also going to be taking your phone calls throughout this morning, our first hour, our second hour in particular. And again, our syllabus includes a lot of focus on the history of this day and years that have followed since that time in the wake of the Sikh temple shooting, the Sikh Gurdwara shooting that happened on August 5th, 10 years ago yesterday. We're going to chat about what exactly happened that day as a way of understanding our history, and then going to spend a lot of time talking about what has happened since that time, things that have been undertaken, yes, by the Sikh community nationwide, locally, but also by many, many people to address what happened there. As we know well, gun violence continues to be a major issue in our nation, and we also know that places of worship under the First Amendment continue to be places that are most regrettably, most unfortunately, tragically, horrifically targeted by some people who feel that is an appropriate way of pursuing their own very narrow, very hate-inspired agendas. And so we're going to think about all of that today and spend some time discussing about that. But before we get to any of that, in our first minutes and perhaps even our first segment and beyond this morning, I'm going to be chatting about four major stories, most of which were somewhat in the news, but principally undercovered from my perspective this past week, that also impact who we are in our nation and where we have been. I began by talking today and inviting your conversation, inviting your attention to our second major movement this morning, chatting about the Sikh temple shooting. Guns, as you know, animate lots of our lives in America, again, with great tragic consequences. That includes the consequences of January 6th. We know from just this past week that a fellow named Guy Wesley Reffitt, R-E-F-F-I-T-T, he was convicted in March of this year after going to a trial, which is his right, a jury trial, five counts on a case that was in many ways a test case for the Department of Justice. He was charged with a number of different counts, including matters related to the riot, the insurrection on January 6th, two counts of civil disorder. He also carried a .40 caliber pistol during that riot, also a part of the presentation during the trial. A jury finds him guilty of all of those charges. Mr. Reffitt did not go inside the Capitol on that day, but in many ways, his conviction, the sentence imposed this past week by Judge Daphne Friedrich, she looked at all the circumstances and imposed a 7-year and 3-month sentence upon him, the highest sentence, the most extensive sentence to date imposed upon any defendant in the January 6th prosecutions, and specifically said, you know, the fact that you didn't go into the Capitol does not make this less important. She basically went in the opposite direction and said, because plainly you brought a gun to that location. And also another significant portion of this, he was at the tip of the spear, as many people say, encouraging people to break in, to do the violence, to engage in the activity that led to the deaths of people, huge numbers of injuries to our law enforcement authorities and others. And significantly, Guy Reffitt, at the time of his return to his home, told his children, his son and his daughter, not to tell anyone. He threatened them and said that if any of them went to law enforcement, he would impose upon them some responses to that. He said, traitors get shot. And that also a part of the prosecution. Guy Reffitt, this past week, sentenced to more than 7 years in prison. And nonetheless, he's going to be appealing that. A major, major case in the wake of the January 6th prosecution. Guy Reffitt says this, I did want to make an apology. In 2020, he said, I was a little crazy. Everything went a little stupid. Well, regrettably, we've got an awful lot of people who did an awful lot of stupid things, violent things, things that undermine our history, things that undermine our traditions on January 6th of this year. I'm going to talk about other stories of this past week, also, regrettably, involving violence. Right after this break, we're here at WAUK Radio. This is the Shaw and Waukesha. This is the Morning Cannolis. Join us at 844-967-2789.